Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Ron Reardon. I'm joined in the studio by our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Looks like the weather's going to cooperate a little bit today.
It certainly does. It's going to be reasonably pleasant, and I think that the pollen count's getting lower and lower.
Just like you promised.
That's just like I promised. Don't wash your car for 3 weeks, and then the pollen
will be good.
That's right. Well, Lee, on Launch, we feature innovators, entrepreneurs, and inventor-friendly companies, providing our listeners with the opportunity to learn about launching a business and the journey that follows. This morning, we're featuring Bill McHenry of Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing, LLC. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsors?
Sure. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay, super. Well, you know, the theme of our interview today is, you know, are you focusing your business efforts on sales? And I will be talking to Bill Henry of Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing, LLC. You know, when you think about starting a business, a lot of people say, you know, hey, I got my website, you know, got my telephones, you know, got my brochures and everything. Sales. I think maybe I need to do something about getting some revenue in here.
That's probably important.
And, you know, when you look at all the potential clients out there that you could have, you know, reaching the properly target markets are that hold the most potential is really what you need to focus on. Well, Bill McHenry, let me mention a couple of companies here and see if you recognize any of them. Carnation, 3M, Philips, Brock's Confections, Time Warner, Disney, Best Buy, Walmart, Marriott. Have you heard any of those companies?
Those are the big boys.
Yeah, Bill's worked with all these folks, okay?
Wow.
Back in 2003, he founded Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing to offer full-service corporate-level sales and marketing services to inventors, entrepreneurs, and small businesses, anywhere from startup to $50 million in revenue. And over time, you know, Bill's really become the trusted resource in the world of invention and new product marketing. He provides educational seminars, presentations to inventor and entrepreneur groups across the countries. And it's really the goal of his company to help inventors and entrepreneurs understand and execute the proper steps towards commercialization. So welcome to the show, Bill.
Well, thanks, Ron. I appreciate the opportunity to come on, and thank you for the kind words. It was very nice.
Okay. What do you see as some of the most common challenges that occur with companies that are struggling to get their product to market?
Well, the common challenges really come out with or come to a company having really poor direction and not understanding where their target market is. And also not having the ability to look outside the box just in case the target market they originally think about is not the correct one. So you have to keep looking and being able to change. I also think not understanding your customer's needs is also a real major stumbling block for companies. And not understanding your competition. And often I hear people, especially inventors, tell me that they don't have competition, and that's very, very far from wrong. They really need to understand that. And what I tell people that they need to do is to think about their product and service that they might have that might be trying to sell and market, and quit thinking of it as a product and service and start thinking of it as a solution. And with your solution, you need to go out and find the company or the organization or the target audience that needs your solution. Because if they don't need your solution, they're not going to buy it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've heard that if you go to an investor and you say that to them and as part of your PowerPoint that you have no competition, they immediately get up and walk out because they know you've not really done due diligence.
You haven't done a lot of research.
Sure. Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, what I tell people, you know, even if you don't think you have competition, you're selling your solution to somebody that has a choice of spending money on your solution or someone else's. And so you always have somebody after you're competing against someone's dollar for someone's dollar.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was talking with an inventor yesterday, and he invented a product that he was targeting fishermen. Okay. And you sit there and you look at it and you say, well, I know that you think that your market is fishermen, but, you know, somebody that's a gardener could use this. You know, somebody that's a backpacker could use this. You know, someone that's a professional photographer could use this. Somebody that, you know, is an artist could use this because they are placing themselves in kind of a similar position as the fisherman. And he's like, oh.
Right. He never saw it. Do you run into that a lot with your clients?
I do often. In fact, a lot of times someone will come to me, and a lot of people will talk about Walmart. Well, there's a lot of other retailers in the country, as a matter of fact. But when you think about the different market segments that are out there, retail, while it's very big, food service is actually twice the size of the retail market, food service being, you know, restaurants and so on. And then there's another target market or market segment called the Jan-San market, which is the market where, you know, there's the people are cleaning the toilets and gas stations and so on, and the distributors in that market. And the Jan-San market is twice the size of the food service market. So you really have to be open-minded.
Yeah, I would think most entrepreneurs are totally ignorant of those kind of markets because they're just focusing on the big box retailers.
Often they are. And I find that, and of course, as you know, Ron, I belong to the United Inventors Association, and I'm on the board of that, as you are. And when I talk to inventors and go to different entrepreneur and inventor clubs around the country, invariably, 80% of them probably talk about retail, and there's so many other opportunities.
That's incredible. Well, you know, we just talked about, you know, bringing a product to market and starting off sales. But what if a company already has sales and they just want to increase and grow their existing sales? What's the common challenges in that area?
Well, in fact, one of our largest partner companies is in Wisconsin. And, in fact, they invented the Repel insect repellent and the female condom to give you an idea of a broad stretch of customers.
That's real broad.
They hired entrepreneur sales and marketing to look for other avenues outside of the retail box. In fact, if you go out to sporting goods stores and in food, drug, and mass, you'll find Wisconsin Pharmacal products either as private label or on their own brands in pretty much every store in the country. They brought us in to look, you know, outside that box and look for other opportunities. If it's, you know, we're looking in the medical supply area. We've looked in selling to convenience stores and so on. So they really must look outside the box. And then there's other opportunity with product. You can take a look at some of the products that an organization sells, and there's a way to package it for other markets so it doesn't cost a lot of money. And you might also come up with you know, some other packaging ideas for companies to sell in those other markets.
That's amazing. I guess quite a few times you get the, wow, I never thought about that market quote from people.
All the time. In fact, we developed a small razor years ago that's the width of a quarter and the length of two quarters. And that was actually being sold in the corrections industry. So I've worked with a lot of different prisons and jails around the country and been able to leave freely, by the way.
How about that? Yeah, I never thought about the prison market as actually being the market, but I guess it is.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of prisons around the country or the world, huh?
The prison market is, unfortunately, or fortunately for people selling to it, is actually growing quite considerably. So, another I thought on that, too, is I own a company called Widgeteer, and I developed that company with the guy that invented the porta-potty in 1960. And our product is called Vacket. In fact, I'll give a quick plug. It's widgeteerinc.com. And our Vacket product actually removes air from plastic bags. And we're selling it, just launching it and selling it into the retail trade. But as we started launching it, I met with a company called Medela, and Medela is the largest breast pump manufacturer in the world. And they, of course, breast milk goes into the plastic bags, and air is actually a bigger detriment to breast milk than just to regular food like you and I put in a zip-tight bag.
Wow.
And so now they're interested in working with us and trying to develop something for breast pumps.
Yeah, and I know
it's
that
amazing what can happen.
Yeah, and I know that's a growing market. You know, as mothers are concerned about transmitting their immunities, you know, to their newborn child, and I know that there's a lot of interest in breast pumps and all.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah, so that's a pretty growing market. Yeah, I mean, you said that it removes air from plastic bags. I mean, is it similar in concept to the space bags that you see on TV and in retail?
It is. We have a piece that we've patented called the Fresh Snap that actually hooks into a zip-tight bag, you know, a quart bag or a gallon bag from a Ziploc or Hefty or Glad. And it creates a one-way seal. And you pump the air out of the bag once the food is in it with our proprietary pump.
That's incredible.
The Fresh Snap is reusable and dishwasher safe.
Yeah, well, I'd heard many years ago that there's no such thing as a money problem, just an idea problem. That's a great idea.
That's exactly right.
Now, is that an example of a business where, like, you sell the product, but then your real business is selling them the bags?
No, actually, our real business is selling them the Fresh Snaps. The product there will work with any bag that's on the market. We focus our messaging on working with any freezer bag because the manufacturers of freezer bags, the zip-tight freezer bags, will state on their packaging that you should quickly remove the air, press out as much air as you can out of the bag, and then quickly freeze it. What our product does is it goes, it hooks to the bag, creating a gasket, one-way seal, and you can pump the air out of the bag, and it will remove all the air rather than just as much as you can. And then you throw it in the freezer, and there's not as much freezer burn as a result of it.
That's pretty cool. You know, every morning I have a smoothie that I put different kind of fruits in, and they're all in these big bags, you know, with Ziploc-type closures. And, of course, I'm manually pushing the air out of them every morning, you know,
right,
and then reclosing them because I know that I shouldn't close it with a whole bunch of air in there.
Right.
So that
would work with those bags as well?
That's the idea. It works with any bag. There's no proprietary bags.
I'm definitely going to have to check out the website.
There you go. You made another sale. Great work. Great job, Bill. Yeah, you made another sale.
Because I mean, normally I've got three different bags. You know, one's got dark cherries, and the other one's got blueberries, and the other one's got, you know, a mixture of
right. Now you can keep them usable longer.
That's right, and that's super cool.
Yep, that's the idea.
Yeah, well, Bill, for those inventors and entrepreneurs that are taking on sales as their own product, you know, what's the key components for them to prepare to present a new product or service to a company?
Well, I think, Ron, the most important thing is to really understand, you know, your customers and the needs, and remember that you have a solution and you're looking for somebody that needs your solution. I also think it's important to really understand the competition and who it is and what it is. And then you need to really understand the features, advantages, and benefits of your solution so you can present it that way to the customer you're calling on. So often I hear inventors and entrepreneurs say, well, if I sell this, I'm going to make $1 million. Well, frankly, that's awesome, but frankly, the customer you're calling on could care less if you made any money. So you have to present it as though you want to show the benefit to your customer. And that is, frankly, all that matters, is the benefit to your customer, and that it will it'll either sell through or help the customer's needs.
Yeah, because
often people overlook that, and I also think being really professional when you're presenting as well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I know that it's common with most inventors to really focus on the product, and like you were saying, people don't care about the product; they care about what the product will do as far as making their life easier, or be more feature rich or something. You know, it's the benefits; it's the solution.
How do you help your clients with those relationships, like to get them into the prisons and into these, kind of niche-y places?
Well, we do. We have several connections within those different market segments, but we also to do a lot of cold calling too to identify who we should be talking to. And over the years of selling and being in sales and marketing, I've just kind of learned how to make cold calls and talk to people, and get some information. And what I've noticed, and I know you guys network a lot too, networking is so important to really reach out there and get to know people and talk to people. And it's amazing. Once you start looking for something, you can usually find it.
Now, is this something like these relationships that you have, like, can you go up to them maybe before the product's even ready for market and say, look, I'm working on this thing. What do you think? Is there potential here? Can you kind of feel that out before you go all in with the product?
Well, in fact, Lee, that's what I recommend everybody do. there's no sense of going out and spending a ton of money on something that isn't going to sell. And you guys have heard stories too, but I have all kinds of different stories. You know, I've had one where a couple inventors developed a product that we're actually selling for them, but they spent $196,000 on tooling before they knew if they could develop it at the right price and if anybody would really buy it. our Vacket product, we actually went out and talked to some different customers. I filed for a patent, and first we did the patent search to make sure that we weren't going to run into trouble that way, so it wasn't a waste of money to do a patent. And then we filed for the patent, and then I actually knew some people at CVS and Bed Bath & Beyond, and I went and presented it to them. But, of course, at that point, I already had a company name, Widgeteer. I had business cards. I had, you know, a very professionally done sell sheet. I knew what our retail pricing was going to be. I knew our competition. I knew everything that what I felt needed to be known, and went into CVS and said, look, what do you think of this? And they actually really liked it, have not ordered yet, but have actually really liked it. So it gave me a comfort level writing that check for the tooling for Vacket.
That's right. Because, you know, Bill, I've heard that story so many times of inventors doing things out of sequence and, you know, spending money before they ever know, you know, will people buy this?
Right.
I had one of these just recently that she had invested quite a bit of money and then was looking at the tooling, and the tooling was going to be, you know, multiple tens of thousands of dollars. And she's like, oop, you know. And so I started asking her questions, have you done a patent search? And she had done a patent search, and it was a very crowded area. Lots of folks had invented in this area, okay? And none of them had ever been commercialized. And to me, that should have been a clue. You know, when you've got something like 100 patents that are all cousins to what you've invented, and none of them sold, that should be a clue. that maybe, even though you think it's a cute idea, maybe you should walk from that, you know?
Right. Well, another mistake that inventors make also is they don't realize that there's a cost of selling and marketing, too. And that's often a huge cost and the final cost. And, you know, many inventors and entrepreneurs think, you know, it should be an honor to sell their product, and they'll share everything with you. But betting on the come is very difficult, and a salesperson worth their salt won't always bet on the come unless there's, you know, something that's pretty much a sure thing.
Yeah, and when you look at the cost of getting a new customer, I've seen numbers before that, you know, the cost for getting a new customer is a whole lot higher than selling to another product to an existing customer.
Absolutely right. The time involved is incredible, and as you know, Ron and Lee, time is money. So developing a new customer or a new market segment with customers is very, very time consuming. And inventors and entrepreneurs should know that you're not going to get it for free unless somebody is making a bunch of promises that they can't keep.
That's right. Because I know that one misconception a lot of inventors have is like when they look for investors is they expect they can make one pitch to one investor and get a check that day for $1 million. And I'm like, you know, it really doesn't work that way. It's usually $50,000, not a million. And they're not going to write it that day. It's probably going to be a six-month dating and courting and investigation standpoint before you see it.
And you better have a list of more than one investor.
That's correct. And I'm sure that working with, you know, getting new buyers for a product is kind of a similar thing. It's not like you're going to make one pitch and they say, yeah, we'll take 1 million units. That's not going to happen.
In fact, in my sales and marketing presentations I give around the country, I tell everyone, I said, there's one thing I really can promise you is that no buyer is going to chase you out the door saying, here's your purchase order. It has never happened to me.
That's one guarantee you can make, huh?
Yeah, that's the one I can make.
Do you find that sometimes the person who's new to this, they have heard these kind of mythological stories about somebody, this rags-to-riches stories, and it's just kind of ingrained in their head that they think, well, my idea is better than that one, and I'll have an easy time of it?
Well, I do, and I think what happens is that so many people get this dreamy idea, and they see the end result before they see the road to it. And, you know, I've met a lot of successful people in the world, and every one of them has failed. And some have told me stories of failing and failing again, you know, and you've got to realize it's not easy, and it's expensive, and it's not easy, and it very rarely just happens.
Yeah, I always tell inventors it takes years to be an overnight success, and you know, hoping that will sink in, because I've seen that pattern, you know, in all kind of industries. You know, one time I was in Nashville at a restaurant, and a friend of mine was with me, and he saw somebody that was an emerging star that he knew, and he's like, "Oh, there's so and so," and he went over and talked and got her autograph. Well, about 5 years later, you know, I happened to see that she had put out an album, you know, and was a great success. But at the time, she was singing in little bitty bars and
right.
anywhere on the street, anywhere she could get people to listen to her sing. And people don't realize, you know, how much effort went into her finally getting, you know, into the mainstream.
Right, the price she paid.
That's right. Well, Bill, are there any tips that you can provide to aid entrepreneurs in getting the customer's attention when they're ready to contact a customer?
Well, I think it's important to be professional and really understand your business. People are so busy anymore that they don't have time. They don't have time to have their time wasted. And so you really have to have your ducks in a row. Understand what your market is, what your plans are, what your goals are. Don't be afraid to make a list of questions so you're taking full advantage of the time that you have. And I think importantly, be as professional as you can, you know, and that doesn't mean going with a suit and tie. You don't go into a, you know, a garage with a suit and tie on. So understand how to dress with a customer. And the most important thing I tell people, in my presentations is to be confident. Your goal is to be the expert in your solution and in the market segments you're in, and go in and be confident. And also know that you're not going to know everything. If someone asks you a question that you know, then certainly answer it. If someone asks you a question that you don't know, don't be afraid to say, gosh, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but I know how to find out. And it allows you an opportunity then to reconnect with a person, because it takes a lot of touch points to finally get someone to say yes.
How about that? Well, I'm sure that, you know, as you're talking to a potential customer, that there's going to be some pretty common objections, you know, come up, like, you know, your price is too high or whatever. Do you have any thoughts about how our listeners can overcome objections that they receive, you know, with a potential customer?
Sure. Well, the first thing with objections is to remember not to get rattled by them. Don't take anything personally at all. And the way to think about an objection from a buyer is to realize that it's nothing more than the buyer questioning something in their mind that they don't understand, and they clearly don't have enough information to say yes. So view an objection only as that. They're only saying that. Don't get rattled. The other important thing is to really understand what the objection is. When you find the objection, make sure you're both on the same, both you and the customer you're talking to are on the same page, so you both understand what it is. Often I see people say, well, the buyer didn't like the pricing or didn't like the color. But if they had worked into it a little farther, it may be that the pricing and the color wasn't any big deal. It was just that they were afraid that you wouldn't be able to change it. You know, and so look, delve into it and find out what the objection really is. And then the other final piece is to then figure out how to overcome that objection and circle back and show them, you know, how you've overcome it and how the question can be answered.
Right. So you don't want to get defensive about this and, you know, combative. They're trying to learn more. So I would think an objection in some ways is positive, because they're curious and they want to kind of poke around a little bit.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I was with Home Shopping Network yesterday for one of our partner companies, and we have a very cool product called Hosewell, and I showed it to the buyer, and he was looking at it, and there was a couple objections that he had on whether or not he felt this hinge on the product would work. And, you know, I feel pretty confident with it, but he's going to now have it tested. But he was asking me, and it wasn't really a negative. It's just he's going to test it. And then the other interesting piece of it was he said, well, Bill, if it doesn't work, why don't you think about it a little bit and how you can make it better in the event that we find that it doesn't work. And that's a very valid objection.
Right.
Yeah, and sometimes objections can give you clues on how to modify the product so that it sells to a different market.
Exactly.
Yeah, because one of the guests that we had on the show had invented a grill to go on a pot that was targeted for making hot dogs and then steaming the buns while the hot dogs were going. And then he found out from that people that bought it were using it to also steam lobster and salmon. And so he changed the opening to go from, you know, being a cross shape to be being a keyhole shape so that they could have a little spot to put the little dish to be melting the butter while the stuff was steaming. And then he found out people were steaming tortillas on it, but it worked fine with small tortillas but not big ones. And so he put a little collapsible dome in the middle so that the tortilla could kind of, you know, hover over it and still fit. So
right.
the objections, you know, actually turned into to new products.
Right. And it's about listening, right? Like, it's important to listen to what your customer is telling you so you can adjust.
Well, that's a great point, Lee, because I tell so many people, you know, they'll ask me, you know, do salespeople talk or salespeople listen? And invariably everybody says, well, salespeople talk. The best salespeople listen. And that's all they do. My wife is in sales too, and we both joke that when we go out to dinner with new people, because we're so used to listening, we'll just sit, we'll get people to start talking, and then she and I just sit there and listen. They don't know anything about us, but we know anything about them.
Yeah, and they will inevitably say, you're such a great conversationalist, when all you were doing was asking the questions that got them to talk, you know?
Exactly. Just listen.
That's right. Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you're not going to have a customer chasing you at the doors, you know, trying to cram a purchase off order down your throat. So obviously it takes more than one contact with a client more than not. What do our listeners need to know about follow-up after the initial contact?
Well, I think that during the presentation or the discussion, whether it be in person or on the phone, and in person it's hard to do this, but you really need to take notes and, you know, make little, you know, jot little notes down and things. And then when you're done with the call, as I call it, the phone call or the call in front of the buyer, to go out to your car or sit at your desk or whatever and then really make some notes and be specific, and so you understand your notes when you go back and look at them. So really follow that up. Make sure you review everything with the buyer before you leave. Okay, this is what you want me to follow up on. I'm going to do A, B, and C for you, and then I'll get back to you next week, or you want me to get back to you, and so on. An example of that was with Home Shopping Network. The buyer asked me to check on that hinge. He asked me to check on some pricing. I got to send one more thing to him, and then he asked me to call him back in 2 weeks. So I made those notes, and believe me, there's a note on my calendar right now to call him back 2 weeks from yesterday. Also be thankful for their time and appreciative of their time. And, you know, understand that in most cases they're as busy or busier than you are. And then circle back for, you know, to the customer that you're talking to with the answers to all those objections and comments. Ask for another meeting if possible. And if it's appropriate, don't be afraid to ask for the order. When I was a young salesperson in Michigan, I used to write down a list of questions, and my last question was ask for order. And it got to the point where my buyers, I called on them so often, they knew that was there. I've had a few of them at that time pull my notebook out of my hand and cross that last question off. And it was they knew I was asking.
Right.
You know. And most importantly, you know, bridge to the future. I have a customer in Los Angeles that I've called on for, I think, 6 or 7 years. And he's not ordered, but I talk to him. I use his name, well, not on the radio, but I use his name in every presentation I give, just because he's never bought anything from me, but we have a great relationship.
How about that? So, and you never know where the seeds that you've planted there are gonna sprout up, you know?
Exactly.
But I think that typically salespeople don't follow up enough. I think they err on the side of not following up. I had a situation in my house where somebody quoted me on insulation for my attic, and my house is like 60 years old, and it's not an urgent thing for me. And I was talking about with my wife, and I'm like, you know, we should probably do this. And then she's like, okay. And the guy's never called back. And it's one of these things where if he would just call, I would say yes, but it's not urgent enough for me to call him. So, like, he's not having a sale. But it's just sitting there waiting for him if he would just follow up a little bit.
Incredible.
I hear that story all the time. And it, you know, sales is not rocket science, but it's just that you have to follow up and call. And you know, think about how busy you are. You know, I've got a customer, it's a regional drug chain that I owe a phone call to, and I was hoping that he would either respond to an email or call me, but I've not heard from him, and I'm going to call him. And it's not because I'm bugging him, it's because I know how busy he is, and Bill McHenry and our Vacid product is probably not top of mind.
Right. Just because it's important to you doesn't mean it's, you know, the top of their list.
That's right.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a real workable template, you know, that involves, you know, not only thanking the customer for their time, but, you know, once you're outside writing down, because I think salesmen probably don't like to do paperwork, but they have to take the time to actually write down what the next steps are and, you know, and like you said, put it on their calendar to call them back and the whole process.
That's right. Yep. And time goes so fast, you know, over, you know, 3 or 4 months. May 1st is Saturday. So we've gone into 4 months this year, and it seems like it was just Christmas. So time just goes so fast, and everybody's so busy. So you really have to stay on top of things. And the other thing I tell people is not to just rely on email or a phone call or something. Rely on a lot of different, you know, communication mediums. And we do the same thing with marketing. You know, doing a print ad is one thing, but doing a radio show and doing social media and Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and blogging and all the stuff, at all you have to rely on all sorts of different communication mediums.
Yeah. Well, when an entrepreneur is you know, getting ready to launch a business and they're putting their team together and everything, how focused should they be on getting everybody in the company and every effort that they're doing to be focused on sales?
Well, sales is the only discipline or the only component of a company that generates revenue. Every other component is cost. And a lot of people think, well, salespeople are just out whining and dining customers. I suppose maybe years ago that was the case. But sales is the only component that generates revenue. And you have to focus on that. And I focus on that with my two companies. If someone comes to me and has a question, and, well, should I do this, or this first? My comment is, well, where can we make money? Which one first? And, you know, they'll answer their own question. So you really need to focus on sales.
Yeah, because I imagine most inventors are really good, or entrepreneurs are good at coming up with the concept and everything, but probably sales is not in their bag of tricks. It's not their expertise.
Right.
And so they've got to
go. In fact, a lot of inventors are engineers. I've noticed, and it seems at first I thought it was kind of odd, but I'm starting to see that now more and more. And a lot of entrepreneurs, some are good with sales and marketing, but many of them were, you know, operations people. And, you know, I have one that was with a guy that invented Repel and the female condom. He's a pharmacist by trade, never really been in sales. And so It's very rare when you find somebody that's been in sales and marketing.
Yeah, that's very rare. Well, Bill, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me at my office number in Chicago at 847-462-8938. You can also visit our website, and the website is entrepreneursales.com. And by all means, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to talk to anyone.
Okay, well, this has been super. You know, thanks for being on our show today, Bill. Our listeners have really gotten some great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and their journey.
Well, thanks, Ron. I really appreciate your time. I'll see you at the Hardware Show, I think, next week and during our presentation. And thanks again for the time as well, Lee.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I'll be presenting on Monday on patent strategy. So, yeah, I'll see you there. Another great show, Lee.
Yes, it was. And a special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents and More, creating the currency of innovation since 2002.
Yeah, and tune in each week at this time to listen live or go to our website, which is thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com, to listen at your convenience. Until next week, I'm Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor, signing off another great session of Launch.